Okay, so welcome again, Gloria, Marina, and Toby. So Tsum Gedalia is now over. Breakfast is now over. And the first thing we get to, of course, is Torah learning. So commend all of you for putting that on your agenda and working with me on this adjusted schedule. I really hope once the holiday season's over, we'll have a consistent time for learning. So I appreciate everyone's continued flexibility. And I'm sure some of the folks will be seeing a recording of this, God willing, later. So we are on Yud Ches Amud Beis. We are on 18b. And we're going to be talking about Bikurim. Bikurim actually...
Is that B1?
Well, not one. It's definitely B1. It's in the middle of the page. It starts with Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Hoshaya. I would guess...
It's B2.
Do you want to give like tell everyone else who's using an art scroll like what column where they could find it?
If you're using the art scroll, it's page 18B to the second power. It's on the right, it's in the right column. It starts in the art scroll, it says the Gemara Wonders.
Okay, thank you, Toby. You see, Toby, I should have had you out there in a tent with me. You could have said, and this page for the art scroll, this one for the Koran, right? No reason we can't have a woman do the announcements for it, right?
I don't see any reason why not.
All right, so if any women want to volunteer, people don't like being page announcers. So if there's any women that really feel passionate about being a page announcer, I'm happy to put you to work next time. We still got Yom Kippur. So
in the chapel, we had a really nice, like a thing that they kept flipping for the pages.
Oh really?
It was put right up by where he was davening from. And it was so helpful.
Wow. So, okay. But we don't have the luxury of doing it in the tents yet. So if you know anyone who's very passionate about page announcing, again, I'm happy to put them to work on it. Okay. So let's begin. So we're going to talk about Bikurim, the first fruits. The first fruits, we've touched on it.
Can I interrupt?
What?
I'm so sorry, Rabbi.
Yeah. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. For Slichos, I have a different text. Oh. So can you, when you, instead of the number, also have the number of the Slichos?
I'll try to keep that.
I mean,
in mind.
Just once in a while when you see a lost person.
I'll try to keep that in mind in addition to page numbers. Okay.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And if I forget, please remind me. It's early in the morning, so sometimes these things just slip out of my mind. Okay. So here we go. Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Hoshaya. So Bikurim again are the first fruits that a person collects from their farm and they bring up to give to the Kohanim in Yerushalayim, in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Bikurim are brought from the seven species that are unique to the land, not exclusive to the land of Israel, but are unique to a certain degree to the land of Israel. And also, they are brought during a certain time of year. Those who want to reference Rashi, the Rashi, Dibur HaMaskel Bikurim, lays it out very nicely for us. Rashi says, I'll just read out loud, or you can look inside, Dibur HaMaskel Bikurim. Bikurim lefnei achag b'nei kriya ninhu, l'acher achag lav b'nei kriya ninhu. So remember, in addition to bringing the first fruits, there are certain actions that one generally does. One reads the Parsha of Bikurim that we did in our Sunday morning Chumash class, as well as they place it down in the temple for the Kohen to take. So one only reads the Psukim, the verses, if it's brought before Sukkot. So basically, our time range to bring Bikurim, the large time range that we have, is between Shavuos and Hanukkah. However, the ideal time is really between Shavuos and Sukkot. Through Sukkot, one can make the declaration of the Parsha Bikurim afterwards, one cannot. Now, that seems arbitrary. Why would Sukkot be the cutoff point that for when I can make the declaration of bringing Bikurim? So it says, Tchsiv, Basar Kriya, because it says after the Kriya, V'samach Debechol Tov, says that you shall rejoice in all the good. Me'atzeres V'arechog, Shuzman Simchas, Lekitas Peros, maybe Vakore. Because between Shavuos and Sukkot is a time on our calendar where we celebrate the new harvest. And therefore, we do read the Parsha of Bikurim. However, min hachag v'hanukkah, yes, even if I get there late and I only bring the first fruits after Sukkot, I still have until Hanukkah. However, mevi ve'eno kore. I bring the first fruits to the Kohanim, right, Zadie? I bring the first fruits to the Kohanim, okay. But I would still not read the Psukim. So just a very brief summary of what that Rashi said. I could bring Bikurim, the first fruits, between Shavuos and Hanukkah. However, ideally, it should be brought between Shavuos and Sukkot, so that in addition to bringing the Bikurim, I can make the declaration of Bikurim. I can read the Psukim that are only made during between Shavuos and Sukkot, because that's a time of jubilation that where we celebrate the new harvest, which is what the Bikurim are all about, the first fruits. That is the background that we need for the Gemara. So again, we're starting from Amar Rav Elazar, we're on Yilchesem and Beis, and an art scroll, it is 18b to the second power. Here we go. Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Hoshaya. Bikurim hanachama keves behen, kriya ema keves behen. So while, of course, it's nice to do everything that we just described, Rav Elazar, in the name of Rav Hoshaya, says that let's say I neglect or I come too late to read the words, to read the psukim of Bikurim. I come after Sukkot. So then, as long as I place the Bikurim down in the temple, I fulfilled the mitzvah. If I wasn't able to read the psukim, it would have been nice to read the psukim. It'd be a mitzvah to do it. But if I failed to do that, I came after Sukkot, still I fulfilled the mitzvah of Bikurim. It's not ma'akeves. Ma'akev is like it withholds it. Basically, something that's ma'akev or ma'akeves in Hebrew means that it is essential and that without it, one would not fulfill the mitzvah. So hanacha, the placement of Bikurim, is ma'akev, but the kriya, the reading of the psukim, ain ma'akeves behen. It would not withhold the validity of the Bikurim. That is the opinion of Rav Elazar in the Rav Hoshaya.
I have a question.
The
Kohen has a question. Obviously, Hanukkah, the deadline for bringing it, is a rabbinic holiday created long after the Torah was given.
Yes, very good.
How does that become the deadline?
Very good, very good. Sorry, my grandfather is raising a very good question. Hanukkah only came up during the Second Temple era. So, but what about, the Torah came beforehand. Bikurim is biblical in origin. So it doesn't necessarily mean, yes, post facto, we use Hanukkah as the cutoff. What it really just means is during that time of year, in that season, is when the harvest is done, because it's during the winter at that point. So we're no longer harvesting fruits. Happens to be that once the Mishnah was being written by the rabbis who were post Hanukkah, Hanukkah became an easy point in the calendar to refer to when making the cutoff point for that time of year. But you're correct. It doesn't mean Hanukkah literally, because Hanukkah didn't exist in the times of the Torah. So it has to be referring just to that season where Hanukkah just so happens to fall out. Yes, Toby.
Does it coincide with when we change what we say in the Shemoneh Esrei? like that December 6th or 7th time or?
Interesting. I don't think it does. Because what we do when we change from St. Tal Mutter in December, that's strictly something we do in the diaspora in Chutzah Aretz. In Israel, it's much earlier. That's we're learning in the, I see you're referring to the Mishnahs we're learning in Tanis, right? So that is earlier. I think that's a little
not
bit
not knowingly.
Right. Well, it's good. You know, you just you assimilated all of that knowledge. So there you go. So I don't think it's connected. But maybe someone wiser than me will figure out a way that it really was all part of God's master plan somehow. Okay. Anyway, we're only like two lines into the Gemara. So we said Bikurim, when it comes to Bikurim, one needs to do the Hanacha. So these are good words to remember. Hanacha, you write these down if you need to, is placement of the Bikurim. Kriya is the recitation of the verses of Bikurim. Umi amar Rav Elazar hachi. Now, did Rav Elazar actually say this? Va'amar Rabbi Elazar, amar Rabbi Yoshaya, hifrish Bikurim kodim lechag, va'avar aleina chag yirakvu. Rabbi Elazar says that if one designates Bikurim before Sukkot, but then he neglects to bring it until after Sukkot, he shall let the fruits rot. My lam, Yishun Vol Matzah and Mikri Alehen. Now, why would you want to let the fruit rot after Sukkot? It must be because he holds that since after Sukkot, you no longer have the ability to read the Psukim to fulfill the mitzvah in that way. Bisa Gadayt and Kriyat Ima Kevis Behen, Amaya Rakvu. If the recitation of the Psukim is not ma'akim, it's not essential to fulfilling the mitzvah of Bikurim, then why am I letting the fruits rot after Sukkot? Let me bring the Bikurim anyway and fulfill the mitzvah. Okay, too bad I can't read the Psukim. The fact that Rav Elazar is telling me that I must, that I cannot bring the Bikurim after Sukkot must be, it implies that the issue is that if I can't read the Psukim, these fruits are useless. Without being able to read the psukim, it's ma'akiv, and I do not fulfill the mitzvah bikurim. So we have a contradiction. First, he said, kriya is not ma'akeves. I don't need to worry about reading. Now he's saying, it's essential, and without it, you don't fulfill the mitzvah bikurim. So how do we answer his question? So this, if there's a concept you want to remember coming out of tonight, this is what we call a shas concept. This is an idea that gets referenced throughout the Talmud. Rabbi Zeira, Dana Rabbi Zeira, Kol Haroy Lebila Ein Bila Ma'kevesbo, V'Vol She'ein Haroy Lebila Bila Ma'kevesbo. It's an idea when bringing, I believe it's a mincha offering. So you'll have the oil that you're bringing, the flour that you're bringing, and so essentially, even if you don't, it's supposed to be belula. It's supposed to be mixed together, but even if you didn't mix it together, but you brought the ingredients, and the ingredients were ra'oi. They were able to be mixed together. You brought the correct ratio of what was supposed to go into that offering, and you put it in the same receptacle, the same kli. Even though I did not mix it together, we say kol haroi labila, since it's ra'oi, since it's able to be mixed together, even though you didn't perform the actual deed of mixing it, it still is valid. And so this principle basically is a paradigm in halacha in general. And what we're doing is we're extrapolating this halacha of karbanos to bikurim, which is another offering that we bring. That yes, even if I don't, reading the psukim is not ma'akev. I don't have to read the psukim in order to bring Bikurim. However, what I was just saying is, you have to bring the Bikurim during a time that I would be able to read the Psukim and fulfill that element of the mitzvah. But once I bring Bikurim after Sukkot, reading the Psukim doesn't contribute to the mitzvah. It's no longer ra'oi for doing that mitzvah, for reading the psukim, then the bikurim is no longer valid. So I don't have to actually read the psukim. You could still say, I don't have to read the psukim. It's not ma'akev, but the capability to read the psukim is ma'akev. And therefore, it must be between Shavuos and Sukkot. Otherwise, the bikurim is not valid. That is the answer that that we give from Rabbi Zeira. Now, we're going to move on. We're going to actually go a little further in this line of thinking. We're going to discuss some other Amoraim. But essentially, I just want to take a step back for a moment because it's going to come up in the Gemara. There are three schools of thought we're going to look at. One school of thought, which I believe is Rabbi Shimon, is that the recitation, the kriya, and the hanacha, the placing, both are ma'akev. But I just want to pause also. I threw out a number of new Hebrew terms, Aramaic terms today. Are there any of them that I can translate? The ones I keep using are hanacha, kriya, and ma'akev. Those are just so ubiquitous in this sugya that it's hard to keep translating them. So can I retranslate any of those terms? Hanacha, kriya, or ma? Yeah. So hanacha is placing down. Kriya is the recitation, is the reading. Yeah. And ma'akiv is it withholds. It means something is essential. Otherwise, you don't fulfill the mitzvah. So those are the three words. If anyone wants to jot them down. And so I'm going to just use them now.
It's interesting. Ma'akev and Yaakov are the same meaning, although Yaakov is spelled with a kuf, and the other is with a kaf.
Like a heel. Yeah, interesting.
But it's holding back. It's holding back. Also, Yaakov.
Ah, interesting. I'm sure there's some connection there. Very good point.
Okay.
Now, so according to one school of thought, we're going to see Rabbi Shimon. Both the Hanacha and the Kriya are Ma'akev. According to another Shirisi, the Chachamim, only the Hanacha is Ma'akev. And then number three, we're going to see that actually neither of them are Ma'akev. Right? So we're going to be very pluralistic. We're going to present all the Shitos here. Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov Masi, like it's Rabbi Asi, or Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov, he discusses this in a discussion about Rabbi Asi, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Ukashale to Rabbi Yochanan as Rabbi Yochanan. He posed a seeming contradiction within the approach of Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, well, what did Rabbi Yochanan say that was so problematic? Umiyam Rabbi Yochanan bikurim hanacha ma'akeves behen kriya ein ma'akeves behen. Well, Rabbi Yochanan, similar to what we just said before, same thing as Rabbi Lazar that we... in the name of Rav Hoshaya that we mentioned earlier, he says the hanacha is essential, the kriya is not essential. So, Rav Asi, when he asked Rav Yochanan about bikurim, he said, when are the kohanim allowed to begin eating from the bikurim? Remember how we got into this? Because the way we got into the whole discussion of bikurim was, we're talking about getting malchus for different things that someone could do. We said, we learned previously, I think 2 weeks ago, that one gets malchus if a kohen eats bikurim before the kriya, before the recitation. Right? So that's how we got into all this. So me'emesai mutar l'kohanim, when is the bikurim permissible to the kohanim? V'amar le Rav Yochanan responded, ha'ra'ui l'kriya mishakar alehen, if it's still between Shavuos and Sukkot, and it's ra'ui, I'm able to read the psukim, then it only becomes valid bikurim and only becomes permissible to the kohanim once the Yisrael reads the psukim. However, if he brings it after Sukkot, ain't roiing lekriya, misharo pnei habayis. If it's no longer roi for kriya and no longer could read the psukim, it's after Sukkot, then once they're already brought to the Beis HaMikdash, even without being placed down, even without the hanacha, they are valid and permissible to the Kohanim to eat. So what we have here is two questions, and we'll break it down. Kasha kriya akriya, kasha hanacha hanacha. We have a contradiction in two elements of what he said. Rabbi Yochanan said, that the kriya, the reading, is not essential. Well, Rav Yochanan just told us that if you come between Shuas and Sukkos, it is essential. So that's one contradiction we have here. Contradiction number two in Rav Yochanan is Rav Yochanan told us earlier that the hanacha is ma'akev, that one needs to place it down. Otherwise, they did not fulfill the mitzvah of Bikurim. Here, Rav Yochanan saying is, as long as you don't have to read the psukim anymore, you come after Sukkos, the moment you come to the Beis HaMikdash, it's already mutter to the Kohen. But meanwhile, he seems to ignore the process of hanacha, of placement. So he contradicts himself by requiring recitation in some instances, and he contradicts himself by saying that placement is non-essential, whereas he actually says the opposite, that placement is essential, reading is not essential. So how do we make sense of this? That's the question. And the way we're going to resolve this is no fancy lumdisha acrobatics we're doing. Basically, Rav Yochanan was a teacher, and he didn't always give his own opinion, but sometimes when he was teaching, he'd be presenting one point of view of one school of thought. So kriya akriya lokasha, harabi shimon harabanan. When Rav Yochanan initially said that the recitation is not essential, he was explaining the position of the Rabbanan. Whereas when he said kriya, the reading is essential, he was explaining the position of Rabbi Shimon, who says the reading is essential.
How do we know it's not the other way around?
All right, Shimon considers the reading essential. So okay. We saw this came up on Yitzayin Amud Aleph, actually at the beginning of the Gemara. So anyone who wants to look back at Yitzayin Amud Aleph, 17a, at the beginning of the Gemara, we said, what do the rabbis say? According to the rabbis, the hanacha is ma'akev. So this is actually referring, thank you for bringing it up, this refers back to what we learned 3 weeks ago. So Rav Yochanan, in one instance, was explaining the position of the Chachamim, that hanacha is essential. In another place, he was adopting a different position. That's number one. And then we have a contradiction of hanacha al hanacha. Nami lokasha, that's also not an issue. It's also not a self-contradiction. Why? Rabbi Huda Baharabbanan, because when he was explaining, when he said hanacha was essential, he was, again, adopting the position of the Rabbanan. When he said, even hanacha is not essential, kriya is not essential, hanacha is not essential, he was adopting the position, and it's going to be our third school of thought, of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara is about to ask, my Rabbi Yehuda, what's this exotic shita, this exotic position of Rabbi Yehuda? Well, I'll just tell it to you outside briefly. Rabbi Yehuda says that you just need to do a wave service for the Bikurim, but as far as Hanacha and Kriya are concerned, you don't need to do either of them. Titania, as was taught in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, it says in the verse, Binachto zo tnufa. The word in the verse, Binachto, is extraneous and therefore must be coming to teach me something in addition, something I would not have thought about, which is waving. Atomer zotnufa, o eino elahanacha. Does this refer to waving or simply just to placing it down? Elahanacha mamish. So kishohu omer, vehenicho, it says once in one verse, vehenicho, hare hanacha amor, amani mekayim vihinachto. Why do I have the additional word vihinachto? So it upgrades it to zotnufa. This refers to waving. So it's about a wave. So he requires a wave service, but not a hanacha. And where does he get this from? This is the important part. He gets it from the extra mentioning of the word vihinachto, of placing, since it says it twice, it's really referring to placing up and down as a wave service. Now, the reason he does not deem hanacha essential is because he thinks it's all about the tumfa, it's all about the waving from the word vihinachto. But what, the Gemara suggests, what if I told you that the extra word of vihinachto is not used to refer to waving? We know that there's an obligation for the Kohen and Yisrael to wave the Bikurim up and down together from a different source, which we'll explain presently. And if we can find a different source for tnufa, for the waving, then we still have the extra word of vihinachto. It's not coming to refer to waving, so it must be coming to tell me actual hanacha. So let's go through that Gemara right now. Who argues in Rabbi Huda? It's Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov. The Tanya. So we're going to use as a Gezer Shava. Anyone remember what a Gezer Shava is? Gezer Shava is when you have the same word or the same root of a word in two different topics in the Torah. And because they use the same language, it teaches us that it's supposed to share certain halachic similarities. That's what we're about to do. The Tanya, we taught in the Braisa. It says, and the Kohen will take the basket from your hands. This teaches us that Bikurim requires waving. Divrei Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Now, how did he deduce this? My time at Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, where'd he get that from? Here's the Gezer Shava. Osya Yad Yad Mishlanim. He found the word Yad, hand, is in our Pasuk. It says, V'lakach HaKoy Natena Miyadecha Yad. And also in Shlanim, it uses the word Yad as well for the Shlanim offering. Siv Hacha V'lakach HaKoy Natena Miyadecha. Uksiv Yadav Tiviyena Es Ishe Hashem. In the context of Bikurim, it talks about the Kohen. In the context of Shlamim, it talks about the owner of the offering coming forth. So what we see from this connection is that there's a wave service, not just for the Shlamim, but also for the Bikurim, and that it involves both the Yisra, the person bringing the offering, as well as the Kohen. Haketzad, Maniach Kohen Yadav Tachas, Ilea Bailim Umeinev. The Kohen puts his hand under the person bringing the offering, and they lift it up, they wave it together. But the point being is, since I have a Gezerah Shava to teach me that I have an obligation to wave the Bikurim offering, so then what do I use the word Vihinachta for? It can no longer be referring to waving, because I already know from a different source that waving is essential. Rather, Rabbi, than tell me that the hanacha is essential.
Rabbi, yeah. I'm a little confused about the wording, and I'm always interested in words. Now, tenufa I know is to raise up. I thought vihinachta is to put down.
Yeah.
And I thought that shaking is referred to with the word lenanea.
Oh, you're saying like nanuim, you're thinking about sukkahs coming, yes, up, right?
Yes, yes.
So we have the nanuim. So nanuim is kind of, yes, like more like a moving back and forth motion, I believe. And tenufa is the is like the waving is done in the temple, yeah.
But I think it's meant, the word tenufa is used in other places. It doesn't mean to wave at all. It just means to lift up. That is what, right.
What they're doing. I don't mean wave like this, right? I guess colloquially, when we say wave, we mean like, you know, you're waving a flag. That's a good point for us.
Rabbi, what is the word used in connection with like the Omer? Because that's a wave offering, isn't it?
It's a tenufa.
That you wave the bar.
Omer ha-tenufa. Yeah, we say Omer ha-tenufa. Right. Yep, exactly.
That's a good point. That's new over there. Okay, good. Toby, you're bringing in the Mishnayos we did together again. So that's good. All right. Putting it to good use.
Somewhere.
Yeah, it's
good. Good girl.
Yeah, there everyone hear my promos that I made for our Shirim. I managed to slip in a promo for our Shirim. One guy actually came over to me. We'll see if he joins. He said, you know, I didn't know about the Thursday night Gemara Shir. I might join you guys at some point.
Who said that? Who?
Andrew Vine. We'll see if he joins us.
Oh.
At least it piqued his interest, you know. So when I gave my infomercial in the middle of my sermon on Rosh Hashanah, it could have all been worth it if we get one more person to join this year. It'd be worth it just for that. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Also, I just wanted to dedicate this. I know I don't have a lot of details, but I know Judd is getting close to the kidney transplant and the surgery. So I just want to dedicate our learning for him to have refuah shleima and God willing, all should go well.
It's like within days.
I think so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it's imminent.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't remember exactly when, but it's walking imminent. So God willing, I hope all goes well. All right.
Yeah.
Let's just get to the next page. Actually, in my Gemara, there's a little period. They put a little period on Yud Tes Amud Aleph, just about five lines down. So this is pretty straightforward, this last part. Amar Rava Bar Adam Rav Yitzchak Bikur Me'emesai Mechayiv in Aleph. Excuse me, Mechayiv in Aleha. When does one become Chayiv on Bikurim? What does that mean? Rashi elucidates the first Rashi on Yud Tes Amud Aleph in 19a. Meaning, at what point do the bikurim become consecrated to the degree that if a non-kohen eats them, he would get, I think it's misa bidei shemayim, death by heaven. So, misha yaru pnei habayis. Even if you didn't go through all the processes that we described yet, the moment's already at the pnei habayis, you've already brought it to the temple, that's when it gains its sanctity, at least to the degree that if Yisrael eats it, he is culpable. Now, Kaman, where do we see this? Who would adopt such a position? Can we find precedent for it? Yes. Kihai Tana, like the Tana we're going to find in the following Bryce, said the Tanya. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, it's Rabbi Eliezer. He taught us, Bikura, Miksasim Bechutz, Miksasim Bepnim, if a little bit is out, some of your bikurim, you're at the threshold. Some of it is outside, some of it is inside. What does it sound familiar? Remember we're talking about the trees inside Yerushalayim and outside Yerushalayim? I traumatized all of us with that sugya. So don't worry, we're not jumping back into that yet. So if a little bit's outside, a little bit is inside. Shebechutz harin kechulen l'chol divrehem. Shebefnim harin gehekdesh l'chol divrehem. Whatever is outside is still considered mundane. Whatever is inside is sacred. And so we see it's Rabbi Eliezer who adopts the position that it's about whatever enters the Beis HaMikdash, that's when it gains its status of sanctity to the degree that a Yisrael would be culpable for a non-kohen would be culpable for eating it. Now, as far as me discharging my obligation to bring Bikurim, I still may need to do a few more things. That was what we discussed. I may need to read the psukim, I need to place it down, I need to do the waving service of it. So, therefore, those things are what we discussed, but as far as Yisrael not fulfilling his mitzvah, just being chayiv, being held accountable for eating it, even before that process is done, it would already be problematic. And that brings us to the end of our Gemara today in Testament Aleph. I managed to prepare it in the afternoon with my headache and all. So I figured if I just understand the Gemara and I don't do a lot of additional things tonight, hopefully you'll all forgive me, but the hour's already late anyway. So we'll call it here tonight and God willing, we'll pick it up on Yud Tes Siman Aleph on 19A, God willing, next week. Oh, wait, let me check.
No, not next week.
So, okay, I'll tell you what I did. Next week, this year, I already put this in the schedule, by the way. I told Matt to put it in.
Okay.
I don't know if you put the right time in there, but I'll update everyone in the email. We're going to do Monday night Gemara Shir next week, God willing. So during what would usually be our topical slot, our Monday night topical slot, we'll do the Gemara slot then. because otherwise we have Yom Kippur. So we're going to do Gemara during the Monday night slot. That's the plan. Okay?
Oh, you better make that very clear. Because people are going to be signing on.
Same hour?
You know.
So let me, it's not the worst day. Maybe someone will listen and say, huh? Wow, Gemara, amazing. Maybe I should join other weeks. But yes, okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, is it going to be the same hour?
Yeah, not 8:30. It should be.
So not the same.
yeah, not the same hour. And then yes, it's the same time that it would have been had it been Thursday, but I need to look at that. Mincha is 7 o'clock these days, I believe. So we'd probably do 7:30, I would think. At a certain point, I mean, doing like 25, 30 minutes after daily mincha, but once daily mincha moves early enough, we're just going to have to like keep the Gemara shear in place. I don't foresee the shear going earlier, certainly not earlier than 6:30.
On Monday, is it going to be in person or all?
Godolim should be in person. Should be normal. This is just because I was at shul for a while because of the fast, and then I came back to eat dinner, and it'd just be like a whole balagan to work with the baby, and then run back to shul, and that was the idea. Okay, but God willing, Monday night should be in person. Keep your eyes out. Once I look at the time for mincha and calculate everything, I'll send out an email. But just keep that in mind. God willing, we'll have the Gemara Shear Monday. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good night, everyone. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Good night.
Shalom.